Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for your listening pleasure. And I am referring, of course, to the GCSB, the SIS, the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA who are listening. Hi, guys. I'm glad you tune in every week. Very loyal listeners here. Helps the hits on my website to go up at least. Now, my very special guest is Jonathan Gray, a noted New Zealand archaeologist who I actually became aware of nearly, I don't know, it feels like almost like 10 years ago now, John, actually. I put your presentations up on YouTube, and they've been getting steady amount of hits since then because it's some of the most interesting archaeological shit anybody's ever seen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Vinny. Now, glad to be with you.
I am a terrible introducer, so I would prefer it if you might introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, Vinny, I started out quite a few years ago with my first expedition down the Amazon into the unexplored headwaters over the Andes, and then gradually increased my outreach into lost technology, because it all began in South America, where I found that the Egyptians had actually left metal discs and plates and documents 3,000 or 4,000 years ago in the uncharted Amazon River. And then I went exploring worldwide and found that there was a pattern of ancient lost knowledge that was the same worldwide. So it was a global knowledge that became lost. Well, ultimately, I then began to hear of people finding ancient things out in the Middle East, and I was skeptical. Especially when I heard that one man had found Noah's Ark and he'd found the remains of Pharaoh's army on the floor of the Red Sea and so on. I thought, well, how can one man find so much? So I went out with a briefcase full of objections. He was able to convince me that it was worth investigating myself, which I did. I took a team of scientists with me. We went to various sites and we found that the confirmation was absolutely enormous that these things had actually been found. These events were true. And this led me into further investigations, and I found that that old document, the Bible, was not such a fairy tale after all, and it even had more than 1,000 prophecies in it, which, on checking, were coming true right now around our eyes. So my investigations continued, and I decided all these things had to be known, so let's get on the internet and put up a website and let people know by a newsletter every week just what's going on in the world that's being covered up. And I guess that's where we are right now. A lot of stuff's attempting to be covered up, but the news is getting out just the same, Vinny.
Well, I call it gainful employment, you know, a job that can never run out of work.
Oh, that's so true. In fact, even on these winter mornings, you've got summer over in America, but here in New Zealand it's winter. And even though I find it hard to get out of a nice warm bed, the enormous amount of interest is such that I've just got to keep going all day. It's really time-consuming, but very absorbing and very fascinating.
You kind of described my morning in Auckland today and my life, you know. So it's an illness, I think. It's one of those things that manifests, which turns to be I would say it's an illness of the mind that's very similar to how a beneficial parasite would compel an organism to do something that's good for itself and good for all the other organisms in its tribe.
And it ends up being good because you don't waste your time. Each day is very fulfilling.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to try something a little bit different tonight here, and this may be difficult for you on the radio spectrum listening, but Jonathan, after his many years of research, has an enormous amount of research and articles and pictures and things of that nature that he's got going on. So, Jonathan, I've seen your Noah's Ark stuff. I've seen some of your work on the discovery of the Ark of the Covenant, even. But I was wondering, what haven't I seen? Because you wrote this book called Dead Men's Secrets about 20 ancient technologies that were more advanced than what we've got today. But I haven't seen any presentations on that kind of stuff.
You mean video presentations?
Or pictures, or anything you happen to have.
Okay, well, I've got thousands of pictures, Vinny. It's a matter of where do we start and where do we go today?
Where did you first find out that the ancients had better technology than we did? What was the kind of first thing that tipped you off?
Oh, yes. Well, the first thing was that down in South America, that there were reports that when the Spanish conquistadors first came into the Inca territory, for example, up in the Andes, and then over the other side into the jungle, they found the remains of lost cities, and lights were still burning in them, ever-burning lights. And so that's something that just wouldn't exist in our civilization. Once the power grid goes down, the lights stop. But here was this, and so I thought, now, how extensive was this? And I began to hear reports of the Marianas in Egypt, Syria, Italy, elsewhere, and so my travels began, and I found that yes, there was a secret of lights that never go out, ever burning lights all over the world at one time. We've lost it, but there are still parts of the world where these lights still burn in remote areas. For example, in Irian Jaya, which is now part of Indonesia, explorers were up there going into the mountains, and they laid their heads down to rest during the night for among some ancient ruins, and lo and behold, it didn't get dark. They looked up, and there were these big 20-foot poles with these lights that just were visible during the night. These men actually went to a town planning conference in Pretoria, South Africa, and made an official report on their discovery. That's just one typical example of what's being found today.
And have you got any pictures or things of that nature relating to those?
Not particularly the ever-burning lights, because I'd want to get something myself that I could photograph, but I haven't been into Irian Jaya yet. I've been to Papua New Guinea on the other side, but not that far.
What was your first expedition where you did start taking pictures of things yourself?
Well, I guess it was when I got into the Middle East I started doing it. Some other expeditions I made, I didn't have a camera. Or actually, yes, I did have a camera on one of them, but I ran out of money, so I hocked my camera to get money to buy other equipment, like a bulletproof vest that would protect me when I went down into the blowpipe area where they shoot you from behind.
Well, look on the bright side. Both of those pieces of technology can take a shot.
That's right.
If it seems to be the Middle East there, I mean, how old were you at the time?
Oh, I was 30, just about 30 years of age.
Yeah. And how did you find that as well, like going to a new section of the world and uncovering weird stuff? What was your first excursion there like?
Well, it was incredible. Actually, talking about the Middle East, I went up actually to into the mountains of Turkey, where I didn't realize it at the time, but I went into an area that was hot with gunfire. And this is where the remains of this big boat in the mountains was. I pulled into the little town of Dubaizit with my friend Trevor Prestige from Western Australia. I took him with me, and we made our first penetration of that area together. And we pulled in at this little hotel about 6 o'clock at night, and the street was absolutely deserted. Now, this was uncharacteristic of Turkey, and so I thought, okay, well, I don't know why there's nobody around in the street, but I saw a big sign, supermarket, and we were a bit hungry. So I said, Trevor, you check in at the hotel. I'll join you shortly, and I'll go and get some food. Well, I walked across the road, and this big supermarket sign covered over a tiny little shop that was probably not much bigger than a bathroom. And in it were packed a whole lot of shelves of goodies, but I couldn't get in. It was locked. And then I looked at the shop window, and I counted three of them, three bullet holes in the window. Oh, my, I thought, maybe we don't have to buy food tonight. Let's get up to the hotel. And so during the night, we were sleeping, and suddenly Trevor shouted out to me, Jonathan, wake up, wake up. And I listened. I heard something fall in the street, and then I heard gunfire, heard dogs barking, and we laid low during the night because our hotel was being attacked. Now, it was the Turks attacking the Kurds, because this is a Kurdish area that wanted to secede from Turkey, and it held a lot of oil, and Turkey, of course, needed the oil supplies and that territory to pay back the West for its loans. And so a war was on here between the Turks and the Kurds inside Turkey. And when we got out of the hotel the next morning, we were told that 13 people had died within 100 metres of the hotel in the gunfire. So that was the kind of atmosphere that we did it in. And I had a Kurdish driver, and we wanted to go to his hometown to look at some ruins. And as we drove along the road, suddenly here was a Turkish military convoy blockading the road. And when they found out that Trevor and I had a Kurdish driver, boy, that did they see red. We were arrested immediately. We were thrown into a military compound with the threat of prison for life as spies. And it took us quite a little bit of manipulation to eventually get through to the governor. And the governor said, I know what these men are doing. They're not spies. Let them go. So we went free. But that was only the beginning of what would happen in Turkey. Every time I left Turkey, I was always glad when we got outside the space limit of its territory in the air.
Every time, eh? Because of your little Turkish skirmish. Man, that's a freaky freaking occurrence, that is, man. Like, realize that your life is not in your hands anymore, that somebody else could just end your life, whether it be imprisoned for it or end it literally.
Oh, yes. Yes, anything like that could happen. And that was only the beginning of what happened. Every trip we made was hair-raising. And there were many times we could have just ended up there and never come back.
Why did you keep going back?
Well, once this gets into your blood, it's like a fever. As they say, gold fever. You know, people just don't stop once they catch the fever. And archaeology and discovery, it does build its own enthusiasm in you. You can't help it. And once you discover one thing, you know, okay, now this is being covered up. What else? What else now have we been lied about? Because there's a lot of lying going on in the establishment regarding things such as this.
It seems that the trick here is to put out as many lies as possible, one after the other, after the other, after the other, and they actually perform a great big pile of lies that collectively cover up the truth, because whichever lie that you expose and peel off the layer, there's only another lie to dig down beneath, right?
Oh, yes, one lie covers up another. Now little children do the same before they learn to be honest, and they'll tell a lie. And then when they're caught out, they cover it up with another lie so that they won't get punished for the first one.
Mm. Now,
but of course, this is so. The establishment has been taken over by people who are hostile to us learning the truth about certain things.
What certain things specifically?
Well, one thing in particular is the lie of evolution. This has been around for quite a while now because man does not like to think that he owes some kind of allegiance to a higher authority. He wants to run his own life. And the evolution theory was a nice out to that to admitting that. Human nature being what it is, we're all very, very selfish, and we like to think that we're in charge of everything, but that's not necessarily so. There are laws, there are moral laws, there are laws which protect us, and they're based upon love, love to our Creator, love to our fellow man, and it's a truth that once you put others first, you are a happier person. But there are people out there who don't want that to be... They don't want that kind of experience. They just want to be in charge no matter how they get it. So the evolution theory is admitted by lots of scientists that I know personally. It's admitted to be a hoax. And so I dug into that question too, the creation-evolution battle. And I came up with so much evidence relating to that that I've written quite a few books and put out videos on it. One is the discovery that is destroying evolution, the lost races dating hoax, and so on. There's a lot of information showing that everything is beautifully designed, everything is so beautifully planned. Now, the computers we're using today, could anyone with common sense believe that the computer just evolved from pieces of bolts and nuts that all came together and formed a pattern that works and thinks? Yet we've got a brain that's beyond even better than that, designed so beautifully and so well and with protection factors which help the body to renew itself if it gets into trouble. And once again, we've hijacked that, and we've made it a hoax that it's designed well, when it really, our brains are the most amazing thing that we know of. There's nothing man's been able to invent that comes anywhere near the brilliance of design of the human brain.
Except the female form.
Well, it's made to be beautiful too. And the very emotion of love, for example, is something which just could not evolve. Things that are just coming up out of mud couldn't suddenly develop love for each other. There's no law in nature that makes that happen. It's something that has to be implanted into a person.
Yeah.
And there are beautiful forms like the female form, which helps to activate that love in the male.
And considering the most beautiful of females all happen to go by a completely perfect mathematical variation of symmetry, right, that you don't really see elsewhere. It's like, okay, come on, you've got something that's very specific. It's incredibly mathematic, totally symmetrical. And in order for that to exist, you'd need to couple proteins together in combination 64,000 plus, and each of these proteins would have to be assembled in precise order. That's like trying to put the code on a safe that has 2,000 buttons and trying to press them 64,000 times correctly at a guess. That's how logical the mainstream concept of evolution is. And what is it when we talk about creationism versus evolution that people don't get is that Darwin already inbuilt into his philosophy that it could be easily proven wrong if any such instance occurred. That instance would be if you found something that had evolved two things that couldn't have functioned by themselves. They evolved together. That can't happen. Under his theory, because his theory was only microevolution that was based upon the finches and the Galapagos. one finch would have a slightly sharper beak than another finch who lived on a different island because they ate different kind of nuts, and over various generations, a long period of time, their beak got slightly sharper and slightly sharper and slightly sharper. It's continuous microevolution. That's how you create those different species. However, there's something called the paramecium propeller, which is a very tiny little... Well, it's obviously a paramecium, and it's got a little propeller on it that allows it to propel itself around your bloodstream and so on and so forth. And it's actually got a crankshaft. Now, how could the propeller tail and the crankshaft exist either by themselves without being working together? Because they only work as one. And the answer is it couldn't. So something designed it. Something made it. And if something's making the tiny... microscopic organisms to a precise mechanical fashion with mathematical precision, what do you think the chances are that we got here by accident?
Yes, and when you consider that the first male and the first female perfectly designed to merge together physically could have independently decided to evolve and reach that that perfection of design at the very same time.
You know, just all sheer coincidence, folks. Nothing to see here. We're not slave species created by alien overlords long ago in different color codes so that we would know who owned us. That didn't happen. Trust me, you're all free.
Yep, that's right.
What do you say to something like that when you go, okay, look, your entire concept of how we got here and what you're here to do has been a lie for the whole time you believed it. A big, big, big freaking lie. How did that affect you?
Well, I felt an anger welling up into me. How dare these people try to put this over us? Are they insulting us with a theory like this? It really is an insult to the human intelligence to be told that you've got to believe this because it's the only truth.
If you believe that these things are not the case, what do you reckon the story of creation actually was then?
Well, I have learnt to believe that that book, which is known as the Bible, historically and archaeologically is absolutely watertight. There is not one historical or archaeological error in it of the thousands of statements it has made. And I've had plenty of years to check this up and interviewing with other archaeologists and researchers, the same conclusion. But I would say the most compelling fact is this, that the book itself has a design, a pattern itself, that the actual words themselves have a pattern in them, a numerical pattern, which is unbelievable and does not exist in any other document on Earth. And therefore, this pattern shows more than human origin. I could go into this. I've written a book on it, actually, too. The Russian mathematician who became a university professor in the United States, Ivan Panin, he spent his whole lifetime chasing this mathematical pattern. Every word, every letter in the original language, which is Hebrew for the Old Testament, Greek for the New, has this interlocking sevens pattern, like the interlocking wheels of a master clock, you might say. Now, the construction, the linguistic construction, whether you take it on the words or the numerical value of the words, because those two languages, every letter is the same as a new number. It's a mathematical masterpiece. Now, just to do one of those books, Matthew, for example, would have taken more than 1,000 years to do it with trial and error if we had a computer in front of us. Now, Matthew had no computer. He wrote it in just 5 years. The control of guidance in this is absolutely phenomenal. So what we have here is a supernatural control from a power which has the same supernatural control on the patterns of creation. And this tells me that you can trust its message. Now, having just touched on that and not gone into any proof or any examples of it, that alone proves that the Bible can be trusted as a document for a source of information, whether it be for the past, the present, or the future. Now, and more than 1,000 prophecies.
It's interesting you should say that, because that's the main tenet of the Kabbalah, is to use the past and the lessons and the principles that it has within it to create a framework by which to analyze the present and predict the future.
That is right, yes. And there's more than 1,000 prophecies in that book, that compendium of books. And these prophecies have been coming true like clockwork. Even dates and names of people have been given hundreds of years in advance. The date when an event would happen, plus the name of somebody who would be involved in the event. And sure enough, hundreds of years pass, the time arrives, the event happens, and the very person who's named is involved in it. Now, no human being has that ability. Yet this book is full of things like that.
Now, there was a theory, of course, that the New World Order, the elite, the heavy metal Satanists, essentially, have been using the Bible as a playbook and staging world events in co-design with it, specifically to solicit that belief. And in so doing, the other parts of the Bible must be true then, if running by that thought. And then you talk about how there's the tribulation that happens and how those who believe shall be saved. And he thought about it like, if you're trying to make somebody stand down to not fight, to literally be a subservient slave and make it much easier for your captors, wouldn't that be what you'd do?
Well, you might do that. An interesting angle on this, Vinny, is that the New World Order is prophesied, it is predicted, and also its destruction and coming violent end is predicted as well. So it's not good news for the New World Order in the end.
And in terms of the actual creation story, you're saying that the Bible's 100% accurate on that, and then it's capable of predicting future events and things of that nature. Does it also? It also talks about Armageddon, which is the revealing of great truth. That at some point, these things which you've discovered and many others around the global community are uncovering the lies and scumbaggery that have concealed our true past and fate and future and whatnot, will sometime at some point come into view. You think this is possible? Do you see signs of that coming?
Oh, I see signs of so much that seemed impossible just even 3 or 4 years ago coming now true into reality. And times and dates have been given. The Muslim phenomenon now has long been in the Bible. And It's been predicted before it happened. For example, the Bible actually gives symbols also, but explains the symbols, because an average reader, a cursory reader who just reads the Bible just to criticize it or to find fault with it, will never bother to dig deep. He'll just read something and say, there you are, look at that, without even knowing that it explained itself further. And the symbols that are given in Bible prophecy, some prophecies are given literally, so you take them exactly as they are, but where a symbol is given, the symbol is explained. And you just read on a little further and it tells you. Now, concerning the Muslims, a very, very interesting set of symbols have been used, and there's no question at all that they're coming true and you can predict what's going to come next. For example, in the book of Revelation, it talks about locusts coming up from the desert, and they are so thick that they form a dark cloud that darkens the sun. And now the first place where you find a word mentioned in the Bible is understood by Jewish expositors as being a clue as to how you're to understand that word later. And when, whether you take it literally, everything should be taken literally unless there are some symbols there. But once there are symbols, then you must take it symbolically, the whole prophecy, everything in it. But all of it can still be understood. For example, locusts coming out from the desert and darkening the sun with their cloud, and the locusts being shaped like horses that are going out to war and fight with ammunition. Now, locusts don't have that kind of thing, but when they represent a tribe of people who does it, the first time locusts are mentioned is in the book of Exodus, where it talks about a plague of locusts coming from Arabia into Egypt to force the hand of the Pharaoh to let the slaves, the Israelites, go. And 10 plagues came, one of which was a plague of locusts. And then when that was over, other things happened. But now, when you go to the book of Revelation and you see symbols and you say, well, who are the locusts? You then go to the rest of that, you go to that prophecy first, you say, well, they must have originated in Arabia, they're Arabs. And then you find other texts which agree with it. And so the prophecy tells you that like a swarm of locusts, the Arabs will come out from Arabia and then they will darken the sun. Now, the when the sun is darkened, what other lights do you have in the sky? You have the moon and the stars. And what is the what is left after the sun is darkened? The sun actually represents the Creator. And represents truth and righteousness, but the sun and but the stars and the moon is a different thing altogether. And the star and the moon symbol is the Arab flag, the Muslim flag. Of course, virtually most of the Muslims, most of the Arabs are Muslims, and there are lots of prophecies which talk about the Arabs and the Muslims, and. There's one in Revelation, which I did mention, but I haven't gone into it, which says there are going to be three woes. Three woes means three periods of trouble caused by the Muslim powers.
And they, first one, they call that the Keanu Reeves prophecy, the three woes. But anyway, oh, God, I'm good. Anyway, keep continue, please.
Yes, and the prophecy says that the first woe would be one that would last for 150 years, and then it would be replaced with a second woe, which would last for 391 years, 15 days. Now, it's very interesting that both times it said that the locusts would have a sting in their tail. Now, the scripture then goes on and says that a sting in the tail means this. The head, it represents, if the head represents prophecy, the tail represents false prophecy, a false prophet. So here you have a prophet coming out of Arabia whom the Bible says would be a false prophet, and he would have a sting in his tail, which is a little bit like, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to kill you. Now, what happened was this, that for 150 years, the Muslim power, shall I be say something very controversial on now at this moment?
Well, this is the ideal.
Okay. The Vatican actually created Islam. The Vatican saw the powers that were out of, were beyond its control. It had taken over Europe during the Dark Ages, and it saw powers that were beyond its control in Africa and the Middle East, Christian powers that would not bow the knee to Rome. So it said, what can we do with this? Okay, here are these wild Arab tribes. Why don't we unite them, give them a mission to fulfill, give them a leader, give them a prophet, and then tell them to go and take North Africa and take the Middle East and then hand Jerusalem over to us. So Muhammad was actually tutored. He had a Roman priest to help him. He was given a Roman wife. He had a daughter called Fatima. Now, that may ring a bell, Fatima.
Oh, yeah.
And he was then told to go out and conquer and get rid of all those who were not subservient to the Vatican, and then hand the Jerusalem over as the Vatican's reward for helping them get off the ground. Well, Islam became a powerful entity, and Islam went right through North Africa, wiped out millions of people in the Middle East as well, took Jerusalem after a lot of bloodshed, and then refused to hand over to the Vatican. And this was the reason for the Crusades. Mm. Now, but still the Vatican did not come under Roman control.
Well, it just so the Vatican creating Islam actually makes sense to me, because they're both Abrahamic religions, and Islam views Jesus as one more of God's prophets.
They do, yes. And what happened now was that Islam turned against Rome. And for 150 years, starting with Muhammad's successor, there were battles going on as the Eastern Roman area came under attack from Islam. Now, then that ended in 1299, ended in 1449. And then in 1449, there began the Second Woe. And this was to last, according to Bible prophecy, for 391 years, 15 days, which, if we are to calculate the time, would end in August the 11th in the year 1840. Now, what happened was, as they began this, they called it their second jihad. And they came right up into Constantinople, and the prophecy is given very, very clearly that as the horses approach the city, fire will be coming out of their mouths. And if you look at a picture of an Arab riding a horse with a rifle in his hand, the fire, and he shoots in front of him, the fire appears to come out of the mouths of the horse that he's riding. And gunpowder was used for the first time in the siege of Constantinople, and they took it from the Roman Empire, Eastern Roman Empire.
Isn't it Suleiman the Magnificent?
That's right, yes. Oh, you know your history. Very good. Yes, that's exactly what happened. And then something else happened. As Martin Luther came up in Europe and started, a Roman Catholic priest, and started saying that reforms had to be made, things are evil. And the command was given, wipe out all those people who were protesting, and the armies came to wipe them out. Immediately, the Arab Muslims came to the door of Vienna and wiped out the Roman Catholic army. So that was a very interesting thing, and that was predicted in the scripture as well, that this would happen with gunpowder. Now, the third jihad was to take place after that, sometime later. Now, it's very interesting that last year, the president of Turkey, Erdogan, sent a whole army of tanks into Syria, and he, from his palace in Istanbul, to crowds of people, he announced the beginning of the third jihad and the third Islamic caliphate. And this was on the 500th anniversary of the day when Muslim troops came into Syria, to the same part of Syria 500 years earlier, to get ready for their second jihad. And Erdogan said, "My signal of us going into Syria today is the fact that I'm announcing the third jihad, and we will take half of Europe before we're through, and then we'll rule the whole world from Jerusalem." That's what he said.
I wonder if that guy's a Freemason.
Well, most of the Muslim top men are Freemasons.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. They used a... King Solomon was basically one of the originators of this, right? And they said that what they wanted to do is have the Freemason secret society control both of the Abrahamic religions from afar, so they could essentially have dominance over society without ever being implicated as its true rulers.
Yes, well, this is the plan. The plan is that Jerusalem is going to be the center of a new worldwide empire ruled by the Muslims. That's their plan. And the invasion of Europe over the last year or two is just the precursor to it. It's not like an ordinary invasion. The people are pretending to be refugees, but 9 out of 10 of them are not refugees at all. They're able young men between the ages of 17 to 25 who are pouring in from North Africa as well as from Turkey into Europe. And they plan to take over Europe.
Yep, and we've seen George Soros-funded organizations that are taking boatloads of these people, a lot of which are actually turning out to be scouted and recruited and things of that nature by intelligence agencies, who are then popping them on boats and having them dragged into the middle of the Mediterranean, just inside Italian waters, where these so-called aid agencies, who never even got a distress call to tip them off, somehow turn out of nowhere to tow all these people into Italian shores to become refugees. I mean, even the Sicilian mafia is now fighting to save its own territory in Sicily. That explains to you how good the international organizations are at bringing organized crime to destabilize the region.
Oh, yes. The easiest way to capture a place is to infiltrate it and then just take over from inside.
Because that way, everybody who is there thinks that they've got a good reason to be there and to stay, and oh, it's my country and so on and so forth, I'm not leaving, I'm not going to, and if it's the way things are, then that's the way things are, and just sit down and take it and watch everything that you and your grandparents and everybody over the generations has worked together to build crumble
into
dust.
That's how the plan is, Vinny, yes. And I just I have a photograph in my bag of a man who was examined in Greece as he came through Greece a few months ago, and he was recognized as a terrorist that they had seen before. He was recognized by facial imagery technology, which is a very clever invention. And a year before, in 1995, he had been discovered to beheading children, cutting their heads off. Now he was coming through as a refugee officially to live in Europe. Now, along with him were coming lots of others, young men. Their plan would be to eventually take over from inside. And already in Europe, the police are afraid to go into many zones. This is in France, it's in Germany, it's in Sweden, and so on. But these are no-go zones where even the local police are afraid to go, and they just let them do what they do. These areas are becoming larger and more frequent, and the population is exploding in the among these people too, because a lot of them are marrying unsuspecting European girls, and the European population as a whole is not sustaining its numbers, but the Muslim population is growing in leaps and bounds, and they plan to take over that way. And then, of course, once the world jihad is announced from Jerusalem, they'll be ready to rise up, and they're already there. The same is happening in America. They're coming into Western countries, happening in Australia too. They're coming into the West, and they're planning to take over from inside. It's a strategy you can't fight. You can't, because you don't know who a terrorist is until he strikes.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of peaceful people. We think, okay, they're good citizens, but among them there are many who are there for a reason, and they're waiting for the signal.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tell which are the real terrorist attacks and which are the fake ones. The real terrorist attacks, you don't hear anything on the media about. There's no police reports. There's no nothing. The fake terrorist attacks that are committed by the government, on the other hand, they've got huge headlines. They're being repeated on the evening news every 15 minutes on an ad break on the television. There's a reminder about the deaths. We stand with London. We stand with France, and so on and so forth. And then if you have a look back at any of the footage or any of the photos. There's blood in places where blood couldn't be. There's people that have their pants ripped open by explosions that have no blood on their legs and no injuries. There's helicopters that are coming in that have a compass and square Freemason symbols on them that are taking away the quote-unquote injured crisis actors. And guess what happens when all the legislation comes through? Does it say we're going to stop terrorists? Does it say we're going to have a tighter check on immigration? Does it say anything that'll actually help? No? What does it say then? We're declaring a state of emergency to take away everybody's rights so that the government can be more authoritarian. Okay. That'll certainly solve the problem of terror, because authoritarianism just doesn't do that. Does it?
That's right. Yes, and the terror then comes not from outside, it comes from the capital city.
No terrorist organization can exist without the aid of a national intelligence apparatus. All right, and I think that was one of the head members of Mossad who said that. And they'd know, because after the Munich bombing, the Israelis got really fucking good at terrorism all of a sudden. We do not forgive, we do not forget. Doesn't that sound like an angry, vengeful Abrahamic God to you? Kind of does to me.
Well, we're living in tremendous times, Vinny, and we see events coming that have not taken our Creator by surprise. He's warned us for them, but a lot of people, most people just don't study these things. They don't know they exist, but it's a wonderful advantage to know these things and you know what to do before it happens. If you need to escape and be in a safer place, then do so. And the big danger today is in the big cities. From now on, the big cities are going to become death traps.
It'll be like Soylent Green out there before you know it. Yeah. I mean, it's already getting that way in Auckland. I mean, I see homeless people everywhere I go now. It doesn't matter what shopping district you go to, anywhere in the city, West Auckland, South Auckland, North Auckland, doesn't matter. There's homeless people everywhere. And article just came out of the paper the other day. What was it? 30% of New Zealand children now living in poverty.
That's very sad.
And the Prime Minister, who started off with about maybe 5% of children living in policy, recently got a knighthood for his service to the country. He's now called Sir John Key of Wall Street. Now, the mind doesn't reel. It boggles. Okay, it boggles.
Yeah.
Because it's just so freaking disgusting. It's so freaking obvious to anybody who knows what they're talking about. And people keep telling me, oh, Vinny, aren't you being cynical? Aren't you a bit jaded? And it's just like, well, I know it may seem like that, but it's just because I know what I'm talking about. You know, it's the unfortunate business of it, isn't it? So in terms of the future, John, what are we looking at here? What do you think is going to happen over the next 10, 15 years?
Well, according to prophecy, my opinion and yours, Vinny, don't count for anything, because we don't know the future, but we can only guess. But as far as the author of the biblical prophecies are concerned, he has a track record which is flawless, not one mistake ever. And he's telling us very, very plainly that mankind's rule is going to come to a disastrous end, and that there will be restrictions imposed on the population that will prevent certain people from buying and selling, and that ultimately a death decree will be going globally, because people who are just standing up for what they know is right, standing up for their consciences, are going to be declared as terrorists who are making the unity of the world unstable. And so those who do have principles are going to be persecuted. They're going to be in the minority ultimately, because the crowd will go the easy way and go with what they're told to do, even if they know it's not right. Whereas those who stand up for what is right and for their fellow men and for their principles are going to be cut off from society and come under threat. Now, that's going to be the last straw, and the prophecies say at that time Jesus Christ himself will intervene and bring an end to man's rule, and he will take over everything. But at this time it's going to be so destructive that unless there was intervention, there would hardly be anybody left alive. Now, you know the New World Order wants to wipe out 95% of the population.
At least.
And this prophecy, yes, at least. And the prophecies, three times in the Bible, say that unless those days were shortened, there would no one be left alive. So there will be an interruption to the New World Order's plans, and the people who are making those plans and ruling with terrorism will be the ones that run to the rocks and mountains to hide themselves. Maybe this is why they've got these underground bunkers, because they think they're going to be safe, but they won't be. There'll be no hiding place for them.
Well, I always found it the most ironic and, hubris. It was one of my, it's one of the greatest words that I ever learned when I first learned it. And, okay, here's your brilliant fucking scheme, bro. Lock yourself underground in the dark with a whole bunch of incredibly rich people who belong to satanic pedophile cults, who are the worst murderers, liars, thieves, and drug-abusing scum that have even walked the earth since the time of Abraham. Okay? This is your plan? To escape calamity? There's an old saying that the owner of this network likes to use sometimes. Often, people end up exactly where they deserve to be.
That is right. And that's the old rule. It's an old spirit. It's a physical rule and it's a spiritual rule. That if you sow cabbages, you don't get artichokes. You sow what you reap, you reap what you sow. And in life itself, it's the same. You bring cruelty upon others, it's going to come back onto you. You give love to others, it'll come back to you. Whatever you do, you are sowing your own future.
And conveniently, though, the people who run this country and many of the others and the Five Eyes states that we call the Western world don't actually like the idea of truth. In fact, what they like, more or less, is taking away everybody's privacy. Now, privacy, I don't know if you know this, ladies and gentlemen, is freedom. If you do not have privacy, you are not free. Ever since the 1980s, when they developed the technology to put keywords of every single phone call in the United States down on a piece of paper to be logged and red flagged for analysis, nothing you have ever done by electronic means has been done by yourself without anybody watching. Just let that sink in and know the massive, monstrous nature of what it is that you're dealing with. This is why I think a lot of the people that get into any sort of quest for truth, John, don't actually keep questing for truth, because they unfortunately find out what it is, and they find that it's too dark and terrible for them to bear, because they thought that it would be easy to win.
Yeah, I think you made a very good point, Vinny. That's reality. And if we want to know what things are, we have to face reality. We just can't put our head in the sand.
Jonathan Gray, thank you very much for spending some time with me today. And what's your website quickly then?
The website is beforeus.com, www.beforeus.com.
Okay. Well, I thought we'd be talking about ancient archaeology and a whole bunch of stuff, but it turns out that we've actually gone really into the prophecy angle, which was, again, exactly what I expected, was something unexpected. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And make sure that you do go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and give them $1 a month through their Patreon there. They have a big apparatus and a whole bunch of other shows on this network, including new ones that are coming out soon, I think. And having a little bit of monthly income for them would be very, very handy indeed. I'm also trying to raise a little bit of extra into my Patreon account, so head over to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and either, if you're a Kiwi, I'd love it if you'd start up an automatic payment of $1 a month into my Kiwi Bank account so I can continue doing this important work for this country, because nobody else will! And there's also PayPal and Patreon options there as well. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you again sometime, folks.
We'll be right back.